Don't go that fast. Okay, make some noise. Does hear that? Is it working?
Yes.
No, you can hear it? Oh. I'm touched. Well, people tell me I'm touched all the time though. Not necessarily in a good way. Alright, so pretty soon here. I assume that all of you were busy most of the night practicing all the things we learned this week. So, we can probably just have any one of you volunteer to come up here and lead our meeting. Anyway, I am so sorry for being late, and I am so glad to be here, because we had such a wonderful time this day, and you are so good at learning things. And today we have little girls here.
Yeah.
Moses, let our people go.
Yeah.
Together and make a little church. Has anyone done this before?
No.
So let's just this test, okay? Here's the church. Here's the steeple. Open the door. You see all the people. Okay? When I was a little boy, my mother taught me that poem. And we would practice it and learn it. And that's what we do in Hand Signs to help us remember today. But this diamond is called the tabernacle. Tabernacle. Was the law tabernacle. When you open it up and look inside, it's full of people. They were special people, though. They were called the Levites and priests. Levites and priests who were their pastors and teachers. Levites and priests. So where are we at? It's called Mount Sinai. Law. Tabernacle. Levites and priests. And they led the people in the offerings and feasts. So every year there were a series of offerings and feasts that they did to show that they were devoted to God and thankful for His provisions in their life. So that was how God said, "You will show me your worship in me." So they made it to Mount Sinai, where they received the law, tabernacle, Levites and priests, offerings and feasts. At this point, then God said, "I want you to count all of the fighting men." So they looked around, they started counting, and that's why the book of Numbers is called Numbers, is because at the beginning of the book, they count all the people, and at the end of the book, they count all the people. So the whole book was numbers and numbers, with a bunch of things in the middle. So they counted up all the fighting men, and they came to 600,000, and just a few extra fighting men. Now if you have 600,000 fighting men, then you probably have 600,000 fighting women. So they have somebody to fight with. So, 600,000 and 600,000 is 1,200,000 people. And then when you add children, it's easy to say they had 2 to 3 million people on this camping trip. So that's how we get that number. Nowhere in the Bible does it say, this is how many people crossed the Red Sea. But we know there were 600,000 fighting men and just add it up from there. So there were people everywhere. And so we just count them in the air, and we just count, say, counting the faces. It's a lot of counting. To 600,000. I think we'll just pretend. Okay. So, where are we at? Change the name. Kadesh Oasis. An oasis is a place like that in the desert. So that way it rhymes with counting the faces because we're making a poem. Okay, so this is one of my favorite hand signs of all of them. So we say, Kadesh, at the trunk of the tree. Oasis! So, let's all stand up. So we're just going to start with Mount Sinai. We're not going to go all the way to nowhere yet, okay? So here we are.
Mount Sinai, law,
tabernacle,
Levi, priest, offering, feast,
counting the faces,
Kadesh,
oasis. Oh, look at you. All right, thank you very much. Went into the land of Israel for 40 days. When they came out, listen to them, God said, because you don't trust me, you don't believe me, even though I took you through the Red Sea, I gave you water, I gave you what is it? I gave you meat. You still don't believe I can help you. Then you are going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until everyone over the age of 20 dies. And I will start over with the next generation who will believe in me. And so, God said, 1 year for every day the spies were in the land. So the spies were there for 40 days, so for 40 years they wandered in the wilderness. So we just kind of say it like this. Kadesh, Oasis, 12 spies, wanders, dies. So sad. Someone figured out that if you say there were 1,200,000 adults, and you divide that by 40 years, it's a funeral every 17 minutes for 40 years. That's trouble. Well, at this point, after 40 years are over, finally they get to move on. It looks like you are starting to melt, though. I'm so bad. Now, if we open these doors, could a breeze blow through, maybe?
Yeah.
I'm just concerned that people are going to just melt, and then we'll have a whole other kind of heat. Feels so much better right here. Let's all stay here together. Then that place would be hot. Okay. So, the Book of Numbers shows all those things. At this point, Moses leads the people, and they go over to the land on the other side of the Dead Sea called Moab. They get to Moab. And there this happens, this book of the Bible. And I think it's pretty easy to understand, but maybe not. At Mount Sinai, the Lord gave the copy of the law to the first generation that came out of Egypt. But they disobeyed the Lord, so they wandered and died. And now in Moab, Moses gives the second law in the book of two things seen together, which is called the duet. Duet, run on me. Run on me. Second law. So, this is how we show it. We say, Moab, going over that area, Moab. Then once again, it's our second time. The only thing we're going to do twice. I'm so excited. We do Moses again. And remember, when we do Moses, we do Moses. Moab.
Moses.
Second law, and then God. Because Moses died after giving the second law. Because he too was not fully obedient to the Lord. So he was able to look across the river to see the land that God promised. And then the Lord buried him up in the mountains. And no one knows where, because they probably would have built a church there. That's the way everything is when you go to Israel. There's a church on the area of the rock because somebody important stepped there one time. And this country is from a little signpost. Only in the old church. But anyway, so Moses is getting away. So that takes us through the book of Deuteronomy. So in your workbooks, on page 11, is where you can practice those things that we just talked to. If it looks like that on page 11, what do you think is on page 12? The answer is just a remarkable thing. Very special. So we need to practice putting all together everything we learned last night all the way through the book of Deuteronomy, which means we need to go all the way back. Go, 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 to the beginning! Okay. Are you okay? about three or four, start at Mount Sinai, see if you can help each other go all the way to Moses.
Down here.
Down in Egypt is where the book of Exodus starts. And Exodus is here where we begin with the story of Moses and his birth in the Nile River, being found by the daughter of Pharaoh and raised in the palace. And at 40 years of age, he goes out to make a difference. And in that act of murder, finds out that wasn't probably the best way to go about it. So he gets sent over to the wilderness for a while. Then he goes back and leads the people out on the book of Exodus. And then once we get out across the Exodus over the river, we're down at Mount Sinai down there in the little peninsula there. And while they're there, they're not moving around, they're standing still. They should be up here with an arrow or something. Leviticus takes place at Mount Sinai. Right before they leave Mount Sinai, they count all the people, and that starts the book of Numbers. And Numbers takes place going from Mount Sinai up to Kadesh Oasis. The spies go in, they come back, and then they go around in circles for 40 years. Do you know why that happened? Because Moses, like any man, wouldn't stop and ask for directions. So, finally at the end, the book of Numbers, they count the people again, and they go up into Moab, where they have the book of Deuteronomy, and he gives the second law to the second generation of people. So that's the flow of the story on the map, geographically. Now, each book of the Old Testament has a picture attached to it. So, the first picture I showed you yesterday for the book of Genesis had a little G, a little E, and a big N. Because we said the book of Genesis is about beginnings. So the key word in the book of Genesis is beginnings. Exodus, what was the big sign they were crawling through? Exit sign. Exodus is where they exit Egypt and get the start of their nation. Leviticus, the priest was holding in his hands the
offerings
and feasts. Offerings and feasts, very good. So offerings and feasts, all the law is spelled out in Leviticus. The book of Numbers, they count the people, they go up to Kadesh, they make a bad decision, they wander around until all those people pass away, then they count the people again. So the main thing that happens in the book of Numbers is wanders.
Wanders.
Alright? Then finally the book of Deuteronomy is so stinking long you can't fit it into a little box. So they've abbreviated it there. And what did Moses give the next generation of people in Moab? It was the second law. So those are the key words for the first five books of the Bible. And then over on the right here is a test that you can take later on. You try to place these 10 items in the books of the Bible they go in. Some of them are a little tricky. Judgment. It's not, maybe there'll be judgment. If I have a bad day, there'll be judgment. No, it's I will.
I will.
And it says in Hebrews 9:27, it is appointed for man to die once, but after this, the judgment. There is no option out of that. All people will be judged in the second coming. Application of sacrifice. Every man shall take for himself a lamb. Each family had to do that. The difference is with Jesus, the children can't go hide in their father's house like they did back in that first Exodus, the first Passover. With Jesus, every person must choose what they're going to do with Christ. Acts 4, nor is there salvation any other, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. There is no other plan. It is Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Now we live in a time when people don't want to hear that message. They say it's not very tolerant. It's not very accepting of other people. But the Lord says, I want you to understand that I made and created you, and there is no other way to the Father except through Jesus. And the Passover started laying that story out for us. The result, back in Exodus, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. The application of the blood of the lamb over the doorpost saved their lives. It was a fix for that night. But the Jewish people had sacrifices annually, continually, because there was no permanent fix for the sin problem. That came with Jesus Christ. Romans 8 says, there is therefore now no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus. Jesus was the once and for all atonement sacrifice for every sin of every person who has ever lived and will ever come to you. That's amazing. I'm always a little awestruck that the Creator of the universe chose to humble himself and take the form of a person, a man, and then literally allow that man, that perfect God-man, Jesus, to be hung on a brutal and savage cross and die for me and for you. It's amazing. And it's only by accepting that free gift from God that we can be Christ followers, Christians in the family of God. I trust you made that decision. You said that I will give up my rights to everything to have the right to be a child of God. I have done, fought, and said things that were wrong. God, I renounce them and give them away to you. For only you can take care of that. I will be your child forever. If you are sure of that, wonderful. If you're not, we'd like to talk to you. During the time between this afternoon session and this evening session, I know myself, other leaders in the church, we would love to sit down and just say, it is so wonderful to be the child of God. There's nothing better. There's nothing better at all. And what took place in the Passover set a type and an example of what Jesus Christ would do later when he died on the cross for our sins. What a marvelous, marvelous thing. Okay, you need to stretch. Wiggle your elbows or something. In fact, let's do this. You're dropping and it's not your fault. It's just so hot in here. So, in 10 minutes, we'll start again. So go stand outside, get a drink of water, say, good, Christmas is over. All right. They also come in flashcards. Just flashcards. And so, my family, when our kids were little, we would drive to Minnesota every year. in-laws live there, or the outlaws. My wife's in-laws. We would go back to see him. And so in the car, going back and forth across Montana, which takes about 5 weeks all by itself, almost 800 miles. And so we learned all the books of the Bible and their pictures and what their key words were by using flashcards. And it's kind of fun. So it's just the same. It's got the picture on one side, the back side. It even has a description of it. You can even get it in the iTunes or the Apple Store as an app for your iPad or your iPhone. Just a fun way to practice and learn those things. There are a number of devotional guides and things as well. One more thing I'll show you right now, and I'll talk about a couple of them. I love this book. It's called Story Through the Bible. And it has 52 stories chosen out of the whole Bible, which means they had to pick and choose. But it goes from Genesis all the way through Revelation. And what you do is you go through one story after another is you practice and learn the story so well as you can tell it to the people in your group. So some people use it in a Sunday school setting once a week for a year. Others use it in small group settings. Some people use it in their family for a devotional in their home. And so my favorite story about this is that there's a church in Idaho in the Coeur d'Alene area which has a big small group ministry in a church. And they decided to use that in their church. And so they got a small group there, and his family, and their small group, brought in some people who actually were just friends and neighbors who really didn't know much about Jesus. And they liked coming over because they were fellowship. And people like listening to stories. You say, I'm going to read you something out of the Bible, and they say, no, thank you. See, can I tell you a story? They listen. It's kind of funny, but that's the way people are. So this guy came every week, and he learned different stories in the Bible. And different people took turns telling the story. So finally this guy, he said, well, who wants to do next week's story? And this man said, I'll do it. And they all knew he wasn't a believer. Okay? And they said, okay, you can do it. And so he said, okay, I'll be great. So the next story, he went and he studied it. And he studied it. And he studied it. And he came back the next week to the group and told flawlessly the story of the prodigal son. He said, how did you learn that story so well? He said, I practiced and practiced. I went and told it to all the people I worked with. I made all my family members listen to me. And he said, so that I could be prepared to teach it to you. And so then he told perfectly the story of the prodigal son. And then within just a matter of weeks, he realized he was the prodigal son. And he gave his life to Jesus. And he now leads his own small group in his home. But just through the storytelling approach to the scriptures, that dynamic example took place. So that's pretty fun. So if you'd like to look at those, that's great. Just something kind of fun to do. Now this guy up here on the screen, this is our next book in the Bible, and this is General Joshua. General Joshua. And I believe he's standing on the remains of Jericho, I'm not sure. You do know how the people of Jericho felt after the Israelites conquered their city, don't you? They were crushed. So. So. When we see Joshua, we just saw him. Say, Joshua. Joshua. And Joshua is the new leader of the people. Moses died while crossing the river. And so Joshua has been his apprentice. He served under Moses for 40 years. He actually went up on Mount Sinai himself and experienced it there, meeting with God. Sometimes he was staying after Moses came back down. He was well prepared to lead the people. So his task was to take the people from Moab in the land that God promised for them. So they rallied the troops, got them all lined up. They came down out of the hill country of Moab, went down in the Jordan River Valley, right about where the Jordan River meets the Dead Sea. And they came down ready to go into the land that God promised them, and the Jordan River was flooded. Now the Jordan River isn't much of a river. It's even smaller now because they pump a lot of water out for irrigation. But I swam in it a number of years ago. And it was kind of muddy brown like our rivers when they come out of the mountains here, you know, with all the silt in them. And the only thing nice about it was I could say I swam in the Jordan River. But it's not a huge river, not a real big river. The Green River just runs right through the hills up in here. It's a little bigger than that, but it's nothing substantial. It's not like the Nile or the Amazon or the Mississippi. So typically, you can ford your way across the river, walking across through it, without too much trouble. But in the flood season, it overflows its banks and spills out across the valley, and it's not navigable. You can't walk across it. They have been 40 years wandering around the wilderness without a swimming pool, no boats. They could not cross the flooded river. The Lord chose to show them the same example he showed their parents when they came out of Egypt and went through the Red Sea. So he came down to the Jordan River. It was flooded. And the Lord said, okay, I want you to have the priest carry the Ark of the Covenant, step in the river, and way upstream, the Lord piled up the river and stopped it from flowing. All the water ran out into the Dead Sea, the riverbed went dry, and a whole group of people marched across the dry riverbed into the land God had promised for them. When they got to the other side, the river was released again, went back into flood state, and guess who couldn't change their mind and go back? The people of Israel. So he does it in there. They went and they camped in a little town called Gilgal. And as they camped there, the Lord stopped the what is it from coming every day. No more manna. So now they've got the second motivation to go ahead and conquer the land. One is they can't go back. And two, we're hungry. So they conquer the land. So when we crossed the Jordan, we said, Joshua, and we just crossed the Jordan, and we said, Jordan. Joshua, Jordan. Okay. Joshua, Jordan. They came to a city that's the crossroads, right where the trade routes go down the Jordan Valley, then they cut up through a wadi, a dry riverbed, up toward, eventually, what is now Jerusalem. Right about where the Jordan River meets the Dead Sea, there's this cut that goes up through, and you can walk up there. It's where a story in the New Testament called the Good Samaritan takes place. So, as they were getting ready to go that way, the city that kind of sat there at the gateway to that wadi above the hill was called Jericho. Now, Jericho was not Bellevue. Jericho was Ordi, which is a little town out by where I live that's this big. Okay? but it was a walled city, because all those cities in those days were walled, because that was their protection. And so, typically with a walled city, the best thing you could do was just surround the city and cut them off. And wait till they starve out. That takes a long time. And Jericho had 7 springs of water there, so they had water to move. Well, God had another plan. He said, I think a better way to attack the city of Jericho is to go hiking. So every morning, all the people got up and went for a hike. And they went back to Gilgal. They did it 6 days in a row. On the 7th day, the Lord said, we're going to change have a change order. And the change order is, you're going to go around 7 times. On the 7th time around the walls, I want you to yell out, blow trumpets, and here it comes. And so they went and they walked around, they walked around, they walked around, around. On the 7th time around, blew trumpets, yelled and screamed, and the walls collapsed. The microphone collapsed.
So that's the way I do it. Jericho. Jericho. So three J's in a row. First one was?
Jordan.
Jordan.
Jericho.
Now the book of Joshua has 24 chapters. It's divided perfectly in the middle, 12 and 12. The first 12 chapters talk about the conquest of the land, and the last 12 chapters of the book talk about settling in the land. So it's really clean to remember that way. So, Joshua, Jordan, Jericho. Then they went marching straight up the hill and they divided it. So I made a little wedge out of my hands and I go, divide, conquer!
Years.
So what did it say, 400 years? The book of of Judges is very interesting. Here's a picture of it. Here comes the judge. Okay? And these judges, they rule the people. They settle disputes. They gave leadership to the people. There was not really a president or prime minister or a king in those things at this time. The Lord wanted to do that role in their lives, and yet judges served in that capacity. So, the book of Judges is kind of interesting. This guy is kind of interesting. He's riding a motorcycle left. And there's a number on it, number 7. So, there are 7 cycles in the book of Judges. Okay? So tricky. Some artists have paid to do that. I can't draw the rulers, so I'm glad you did not me. So the cycle goes like this. There's silence and peace in the land, and the people get comfortable, so they sin. Because they sin, God places them in servitude under another nation. The Philistines or the Midians or some other country came in and dominated them. After a while, they would cry out to God, and He would send them in supplication. They'd pray, and He'd send a Savior to them, the judge who would rescue them. Then it would get peaceful again, they'd kind of forget about the Lord, and they would sin, and they'd go back around the cycle. 7 times in that period of 400 years. And so, we don't have time to study all of the judges that have been said, well, we're going to study. And I'm thrilled to say that we have them with us today. It's just special how that happens. And I know that you are hoping that you can come up and help me. Alicia, nice to meet you. I'm Terry. I don't like shots. Okay, now you're going to help us out because you're going to be the first judge that we're going to learn about. Yeah, so let me help you get set up. You need a palm tree to judge the people on earth, okay? All right. Turn this way, so here's your gavel, so you can judge the people. So Deborah was the first judge that we're going to learn about. She had long, dark, flowing hair, kind of like me. So when we say Deborah, we'll just stroke that one. Whatever you ask of me, God, I'll give it all for you. I will serve you fully with a whole heart for God. That's what David did.
And she changed the name, Dave. She changed her people.
Oh, my God.
Dad was retired.
So anyway, Dad, I'm really thankful for you and the great example you set and your willingness to stand here and be there as well. So let's thank Deborah for being a nice judge.
Yeah.
$32,000, that'll help. My wife said, Gideon, that's your army. That's not my army. Tell anybody that wanted to be here to go home. 22,000 people took off and went home. He had 10,000 soldiers left. The Lord said, that's really nice, but that's still not my army. That's your army. Are you sure? I'm sure. Take them down to the stream, have them get a drink. Those that splish splash, take a bath, dive right in, they're not going to soldiers, send them home. The ones that are circumspect and careful, dip the water in their hand and look around, those are my soldiers. So 10,000 men went down to the creek. They took drinks, and only 300 were careful. So another 9,700 got sent home. Gideon now has 300 men. It's an army you cannot even count in the valley. God said, bring the valley. Take a jar, put a lit torch in it. Have a trumpet. Be prepared to yell. And in the middle of the night, they broke the jars, held up the torches, blew the trumpets, and yelled out, for this Lord and for Gideon! And the army went nuts down the valley and literally slaughtered themselves. Almost a couple hundred thousand people. And Gideon and his family and his army ran down and just cleaned up things afterwards. And then you know what happened to Gideon after that? He got a donkey, and he started going around to hospitals and hotels and put Bibles on everything. It's still happening today. So, when we say Gideon, we just wring the water out. Gideon. So, Judges, 400 years, Deborah,
Gideon.
Now, I need some help proclaiming the last judge. A lot of people confuse him because he looks a lot like me. His name was Samson! Samson, okay? And fortunately for you and for me, John and Mint volunteered to help with this. Samson. They're going to give us their very best Samson pose. I'll vote a little time, and then we'll vote on which one is in the famous applause over here. Okay, so ladies, spread out so you don't hurt each other. Okay, are you mentally prepared? Some never are. But anyway, we're going to start round two. Here we go. Judge.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Joshua. Here we go.
Joshua, Jordan, Jericho, divide, conquer, south, north, divide, saddle, 12 tribes, judges, 4 years, Deborah, Gideon, Samson.
Perfect. Now watch me. This is the last one, verse of the book of Judges. Everyone did what was right. Sounds pretty good. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Everyone did what was right
in their own eyes.
Except
you.
Ruin. And after our break. Okay, so here we go. Joshua,
Judges, and we know that Ruth takes place during the time of the Judges. And then when we come back this evening, we'll talk about Samuel. Key word for Joshua is comfort. Everybody standing on the ramp, the rulers there. Judges.
Cycles.
Very good. And Ruth is a love story. Alright. Now, we're talking about how it impacted their lives and how that impacts our lives, and we'll be done today afternoon. Okay, the book of Genesis, God was teaching his people. At the end of the book, they're in slavery in Egypt. In the book of Exodus, God redeems his people, he buys them back through the Exodus process in Passover. And Mount Sinai, he gives them the laws, the things they need to know to be his people. He teaches them. In the book of Numbers, they go to Kadesh Oasis, and they're tested on how well they did on learning the material at Mount Sinai. How they do on their test? Poorly. They flunked it. And it cost a whole generation of lives as they wandered for 40 years. In Moab, Moses reteaches, because that's what good teachers do. If the class doesn't get the material, you go back and teach it again. Because everything is built upon the thing before it. So Mount Sinai, Moses tells the next generation, the second law, he reteaches the law again. And when they go to Joshua and they conquer the land, with the exception of that one man, Achan, they swept through the land. How they do then in obeying the Lord? They did great. They were retested and they got an A+. Okay? Our lives are similar. The Lord is teaching and testing us all the time too. Because he wants us to grow more in our faith and in our honoring of him in our lives. Knowing what we do needs to be translated into doing what you know. In my life, this has been a very personal process, as I guess it is for everybody. There are a lot of areas in my life, even though I grew up in church, I had prenatal experiences in church. My family was always in church. If someone was cleaning up, we were there. If someone had to lock the building up, we were there. I was always in church. At 7 years of age, I remember kneeling in a garage in my father's house that still lived there and asking Jesus to come into my life and forgive me for my sin. But as you grow up, you have to make it your own faith. It's not good enough to just grow up in your parents' home because they were faithful Christians. Just because I accepted Jesus out of the garage, didn't even know the car. And then I was a Christian, but I was still a growing fledgling. And I had to learn over a long period of time through a lot of lessons of being taught things and being tested what it really meant for me to say, I'm all in. I'm fully committed to you, God. And it kind of came to a climax now 19 years ago. I was in a kingdom in Seattle. Remember that thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, some of you don't have any idea what that is. But anyway, and there were 70,000 friends that were with me and a promise to be with God. And preacher after preacher for 3 days shared just solid teaching, one after another. And God spent the whole weekend just peeling all the layers that I built around myself, protecting myself from having really submitted. And one by one, I was convicted about the way I had been a husband. I was convicted about how I put work before my children. I was convicted about how I liked to look really good in public, but really didn't always honor the Lord in my thought life, which I'm not engaged in. And what I discovered was that I was a very prideful person.
And say, God, I've packed all that stuff for me around anything. What it finally broke down to is actually probably the greatest area of resistance in my life to what God wanted for me was in the area of my working life. See, I had for years and years and years gone to work and had problems with my boss. I was working for Christian organizations. But I would not submit fully to the authority because I was not a person. And I would have a job and I'd work there for a while. And then I'd go to another job and I'd go, well, I'm away from that guy. And find out that my boss changed jobs too and I didn't want it. And I would go to another job 10 years later maybe. And lo and behold, my boss had another body and was there at that job too. Because it was the position that I was rebelling against. It wasn't a person. And I wasn't allowing God to fully direct my steps in the workplace because of my pride. The Lord convicted me of that. And I had been taught that lesson and tested on it and failed the test for 20 years. And job after job after job. It's kind of embarrassing to tell you. But after that weekend, I went back to church to find work. And I made an appointment with my boss. And I went to him and I said, Don, I have to tell you that the Lord has really convicted me that I haven't been humbly serving you with a whole heart. I've been passive resistant because I was protecting myself and I thought I knew what was in right. And he goes, I know. And we talked it all through and prayed together, and I became a different person. Now, he held me accountable for that declaration, and rightfully so. But when I passed that test, I have now continued to work for that man for another 20 years. And we have an outstanding relationship, and we have done wonderful things for the kingdom of God together. And doors of ministry have opened in my life that would have never opened, I don't think, if I had not submitted myself to the Lord in that area. Just a couple years after that, I got introduced to Walk Through the Bible. I was told, you need to come teach for us. And this is the most fun thing I do in my life. Holding a pearl in a couple days is pretty good. I mean, my grandbabies trump everything. But, God opened new avenues, new directions, and opportunities in my life when I passed the test, when I'm more fully submitted to Him. And I believe that that's the way God works in each and every one of our lives. That we are either being taught something by the Lord right now, we're being tested by the Lord, or we're maybe being retaught. And this enters into all areas of our life. It may be your walk with the Lord directly. It may be your relationship. Maybe your spouse or family members. Maybe for you it was like me, it's the work environment. But there's a lot of different ways that people resist fully submitting to the Lord. And I think the greatest lessons that I see in Judges are great discipleship. Great disciple. Submit to the Lord. So at the bottom of that page, there's a couple questions on this. And it says in those questions, the first one really is, what area of your life has God been teaching and testing you in? And the second question says, in order to pass the test, what do you need to do? For me, I had to go back and humble myself before my boss for the Lord's strength and help. Now you're thinking, well, how in the world are we supposed to figure all that out here? The Holy Spirit wants to tell you. And I have watched this happen, not just in my life, but in lots of lives of people, repeatedly for 16 years. When we stop, and our skill, and ask that God can reveal to us areas that we need to submit to Him, we will do so. Because He wants nothing more than you to pass the test to go forward. So I am literally going to be quiet. I don't know if I can. Okay? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to be still. I would ask you to just pray and ask God, is there an area in my life, Lord, that today, right now, I need to submit to you so I can pass the test and be more of who you need to be? Off of that molten ore. And then they reheat it again. And they continue to take the impurities off of the ore. And they heat it again and continue to take the impurities off the ore. And the goldsmith knows the purity of that molten metal by the quality of their reflection seen. The more impurity in there, the less the goldsmith can see his own reflection. And in our lives, too, God sees Himself more clearly as we turn those imperfections and those blemishes and those sins over to Him and let Him change us to be more like Him. Over there.